The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Biatch! It's a hard knock life, says Joe Z. As Black Cats provide him with a very big beat, we ask, what happened to his blueprint? Can Mike Dean really take the rap? And does Mu have 99 problems and Abramovich ain't one? Biatch! Pod salute, Sunderland. Wonders where they've been all season and rounds up the rest of the weekend stories, including Sterling on the money as it continues not to slip for Liverpool. And Everton, Man United, flat, disjointed and off target. And that was just the post-game press conference. All of that plus news from around Europe and those Champions League semi-finals, Atletico against Chelsea and Bayern at the Bernabeu. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody. Right, amazing weekend and an amazing lineup for today's Football Weekly with Simon Burton here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hello to you. James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
And just back from Japan, very excitingly, Paul McInnes.
Hello there, James.
Just back from Japan by way of Carrow Road.
By way of Carrow Road, yeah.
Right.
I arrived back about 10 p.m. on Saturday. Went straight to bed, straight up again on the bullet train to East Anglia.
Yes.
It was some atmosphere.
I bet it was. We'll talk more about that atmosphere very shortly. But we're going to begin with the surprise of surprises, the shock of shocks. Chelsea losing at home for the first time under Jose Mourinho to the bottom team in the league, Sunderland. How did this all happen? Barry, watching this, at what point did you think, it's on?
I still haven't really come to terms with the fact that Sunderland have won. I watched it in my local pub alone and was at the final whistle. My jaw just was on the floor. I couldn't believe what
Where was
I'd
the
seen.
Rest of you, Barry?
On a stool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at the bar. Hmm. You know, I was just absolutely flabbergasted. And part of me was obviously delighted that Sunderland won the game. And I was highly amused by Jose Mourinho's sour grapes afterwards. And part of me was slightly disappointed that Sunderland hadn't played like that more often this season. I think it's the first time this season they've put together back-to-back decent performances. You know, they've generally struggled to get one good performance in a row together. It's inspired a bit of hope now, where previously there had been none.
Right.
And the games they have coming up are winnable if they play like that. I mean, they weren't brilliant or anything, and Chelsea missed a lot of chances, as is their wont these days. They were toothless again, and that played into Sunderland's hands. Now I'm hopeful of that Sunderland could stay up again. And I just know deep down that they won't. But the hope is there.
Right, you just keep talking. I'm just unfolding the battle for survival graphic in today's top Guardian. Here we go. And what it tells me is that you've got a game in hand, Sunderland, which is at home to West Brom. You could like that. You've got to like your chances there.
There's three home games left out of four. One against Cardiff, one against West Brom, and one against Swansea. You know, Cardiff and West Brom aren't particularly good. You'd like to think Swansea be on the beach at the last day of the season. Mm-hmm. And the other game is Manchester United away. And that's not a particularly tough one either, going on recent form.
At the same time, you've only won three home games all season.
I know. Well, I mean, I was discussing the game with my dad, and I was, you know, he's sort of saying, where did that come from? And you can beat Chelsea at Fortress Stamford Bridge.
Did he expect you to provide a reasonable answer, given that you work in football journalism?
No, God, no.
Did you feel any pressure?
Not in the slightest. Right. I'm sure he thinks I'm an idiot, like many other people.
Sure.
But like the games they've lost at home, Everton, West Ham, Hull, Villa, Spurs, and then, you know, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, that's fair enough. Fulham, first game of the season, they lost at home, sort of set the template. If they can beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, why the hell can't they pick up points in some of those games?
I don't know.
It's like Barini. He scored seven goals this season. Like two in the derby with Newcastle,
Two have come against Chelsea, scored against Manchester United, scored against Manchester City, scores against all the big clubs. But sort of, you know, when it comes to beating teams around them.
Mm. They are what we term bumpy track bullies, I think, in the in the business. But Mannone, who was very much the scapegoat for midweek's drop points there at the Etihad, was a bit of a star this time. And as you predicted, Barry, Connor Wickham, now that he's ruptured the seal, now that he's broken that dry spell, he's on the goals. He's in the goals again.
Yeah, and he did well to pounce and capitalise on the error. And I do think he will continue to score. I just wish he'd sort of clicked a bit sooner this season.
All right, well, it might be in time. It might be in time. Jonathan Wilson tweeting, basically, Sunderland have won the league title, gave Liverpool our two best players, took 4 points off City and three off Chelsea. You mentioned the error there from Mark Schwarzer, which led to the first Sunderland goal. Had Pedicek been playing, had he not been troubled by that illness, do you think this would have gone the same way?
It did obviously affect
you
the
confidence.
You just got
off the plane, actually. You probably haven't seen this.
I've seen retrospectively.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I was updating on the right. Heathrow Express as okay. It was happening.
Right.
But it obviously gave a fillip to Sunderland, and they took more shots. They were more speculative. But the form check's been, and you would have anticipated that he might have held onto the ball, but some moments happen.
Right. All Chelsea's six defeats in the league this season have come before a Champions League game. And I wonder as well if that influenced his team selection. Surely, for example, coming on later after he's been important for them of late.
Yeah, I mean, their defeats this season, to the likes of Villa, Palace, obviously Sunderland, the drop points in both their games against West Brom. These are teams that you'd expect Chelsea to be trouncing, and comfortably beating. And it's what's let them down. It's why they won't be winning a title. I think this will be the first time in Mourinho's career that hasn't won a league in consecutive years. Because obviously he didn't win it in La Liga. He's probably not going to win it this year. It's the first time he's ever gone more than two seasons without winning a league title.
Curse but you, Mike Riley.
It is important to point out that none of this is his fault at all.
Yeah, it's the Illuminati.
It's ball boys, fourth officials, referees, his own strikers. They're all conspiring against him, so it's.
I thought he liked the way
difficult
Mike
not
Riley
to feel sorry for him at this difficult time.
Didn't he come out and was making a special point of saying how well Mike Dean had done?
Well, it's difficult to know how much of that 4-point agenda was steeped in sarcasm and how much wasn't. Like,
maybe we got the wrong end of the stick.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't being complimentary about.
He might have
Mike
been
Dean.
Being sarcastic about his own players.
Yeah, and he might have been being sarcastic about Sunderland's players. So yeah, it's difficult to know where he's.
Yeah. You're right to say the referee did have a good performance because he didn't send Ramirez off for that terrible forearm,
which was a terrible. But and you wonder, I imagine that the FA will be introducing a retrospective ban, will they?
You'd have thought that's his last league appearance of the season, really.
Right, okay. But can I just raise a moment that happened a very short time before he hit Larsson across the side of the face, when I think it was Larsson came screaming across the field and body-checked him just as he was about to head the ball. He was standing alone in the box, ball was coming in, Larsson crashed into him and he goes and Ramirez went flying into the net rather than the ball.
Wasn't that moment picked out on Match of the Day as being an example of particularly fantastic defending?
Yeah, wasn't it particularly fantastic foul.
I think that certainly it's open to interpretation.
Yeah.
And Ramirez, you wouldn't expect him to just swing his arm based on nothing. Like, clearly he was frustrated by the situation in the game and what had been going on in the preceding minutes.
Yeah.
Still, down. I mean, against Villa, he got sent off for that.
He's let himself
dreadful,
down as well.
Dreadful challenge on El Amadi. And now he's gone and done this. They've lost both games. I think Mourinho needs to probably have a bit of a word with him because it's unacceptable.
And what about Ri Faria?
Well, I mean, unpleasant behaviour from the Chelsea bench. And I know all clubs have.
Come on, Barry, you loved it. We all loved it.
Oh, no, it was great. It's funny. It's entertaining. It's amusing. But the Chelsea bench do seem to be more poorly behaved than the benches of most other clubs in the Premier League, and Rui Faria is sort of renowned for being the most chippy and irritating of the people on that bench. So it wasn't a huge surprise to see him absolutely lose it. But
I'm a slightly token gesture of restraint for Mourinho as well. He was like trying to, like, hey, I'm trying to hold this guy back, but just not very hard.
He got him by the hair. He did. But yeah, got a little bit of a tussle there.
He could always have done the old thumb in the eye.
Yes.
That would have sorted
Well, this is why I'm really looking forward to the Atletico game.
Ah.
Because the Atletico assistant famously came out of his dugout and said, I'm not Tito, I'll knock your block off, in a very polite way.
So, didn't respond.
Yeah, it could be fierce.
Yeah. Well, we'll hear a little bit more about that clash shortly from Sid Lowe in Spain. But you mentioned Ramirez missing perhaps the rest of the season, but you doubt that he's going to be involved this weekend when they go and visit Liverpool. Liverpool, who are fresh from a... How many is that now? Is that 11? 11th straight win. And it was at Carrow Road, and you were there, Paul McInnes.
Yeah, but again, like everything else so far, I saw it all completely differently from people. I thought we gave it quite a good game. The first two goals I thought were exceptional play rather than poor closing down or marking by us. And I thought we had them on the rock second half.
Simon, you were minute by minuting this.
I was, yeah.
What did you think?
Well, Liverpool came out of the traps as they do, and that first quarter of an hour was stunning. And it was as if they were exhibiting, they were in a different planet, a different universe, playing a different sport. But from that, I mean, whether Norwich forced them back, whether they decided two goals was enough, and it doesn't, like, if we need to score some more, we'll score some more, so let's not push forward so wholeheartedly. I don't know. But that first quarter of an hour was like a different match to the remaining 75 minutes.
I think they didn't have as many outlets, you know, as we know, through their injuries and suspensions going forward. And I think that told over the course of the game.
Yeah.
Sterling was exceptional the first 15 minutes. He slightly faded. Suarez was never quite in...
Adam was also... started the game brilliantly. Faded a bit. Lucas was never...
Yeah, quite often Lucas found himself in a number 10 position, and that's not really one where he's kind of best for his skill set.
Mm.
It was Liverpool's season in a nutshell, really. Shonky at the back, brilliant going forward, roared out of the traps and got early goals. I was just checking earlier, 13 of their Premier League games this season, Liverpool scored inside 15 minutes.
Wow.
15 of their games, they scored inside 16 minutes.
Wow.
Slightly irritating.
Three of their last four games have scored inside 6 minutes. Just keep getting quicker.
Wow. And you know how many goals they've scored now in total?
96.
Boom. And Suarez has got 30, and he didn't even play the first 6 weeks of the season. That's crazy. That is crazy. What about Raheem Sterling? A tweet I saw from a fella called Seb says, maybe England, because a lot of people talking about Raheem Sterling, maybe England should use all the Liverpool players in their club positions rather than inevitably moving them around to fit Wayne Rooney. And Wayne, later on Sunday, adding strength to that theory with his performance at Goodison. We'll talk about that later on, but Sterling just looks amazing at the moment.
He does. I mean, he's a wonderful talent. And I mean, certainly from the emails I get doing Minute by Minute, that there's a lot of the country, of those people who don't support Liverpool, quite a lot of them are loving watching Liverpool at the moment and are supporting them in their bid to win the league.
Mm.
But there's also quite a lot of people who are getting right naffed off at the amount of love Liverpool are receiving.
Oh, dear.
Sterling is just is a pleasure to watch, really.
Yeah,
I have to say that going up on the train from London and in and around the ground, particularly before the match and after the match, we were wandering off and you could hear the chants echoing from the away end. There's something kind of OTT about the euphoria around Liverpool and amongst Liverpool fans. But at the same time, to be close to it, it overwhelms you. And you really could feel how they were driving the team on, and somehow the spirit of the fans is with the spirit of the team, and it's not something you can say has happened with many sides in recent years. And it's I found it quite moving in the end.
But I do worry for them, because they have a difficult game, obviously, this weekend. Crystal Palace are the other form team, and that's the game after that.
Oh, after that, right.
I worry a bit for Liverpool. Like, it's not a done deal yet.
It's not a done deal.
So Chelsea... They slipped up this weekend. As we've already discussed, they slip up against poor teams. But their record against the top six is the best around.
Right.
And
you're absolutely right, Simon.
I'm just intrigued.
But there's three games to go and 5 points between them.
And also, yeah, Mourinho's comment on Liverpool this season so often has been they're not in Europe. They've played so fewer games than we have.
Mm.
Chelsea go and play Atletico on Tuesday. They're going to play against a team which is, what, high intensity, aggressive, super exhausting. And they're going to play away at Liverpool, who don't play similar to Atletico, but still play a very quick blitz kind of game. And yeah, I just think it could all unravel, really.
Right. All right. Well, it sounds like we should talk about that Atletico game coming up at the Calderon on Tuesday. And for that, we'll be dialing up Sid right after this.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm very well. What happens on a Monday, an Easter Monday in Spain, Sid? Not much?
Does everyone stay in bed all day and then have their dinner at 2 o'clock in the morning?
No, what I honestly can't remember, because someone mentioned it to me the other day, because obviously when you do what we do, bank holidays don't really count.
Yeah.
Friday was a bank holiday, and I'm not sure which way round it was. And Thursday, Good Thursday, if you call it Good Thursday, was a bank holiday in Madrid, but not in Barcelona. And Monday is a bank holiday in Barcelona, but not in Madrid, all the other way round. I can't remember which way round it is. I've got a feeling today is a bank holiday in Madrid and right. Not in Barcelona. But anyway, from my point of view, nothing happens.
Oh, you're not wandering around in a bed sheet or anything like that?
Isn't that what they do in Seville around this time?
Yeah.
Oh, they do some great parades in Seville, but those largely are in the build-up to Easter, so there's parades on, and the whole of Andalusia is very, very intense with its Easter celebrations, so and actually the rest of Spain as well, but particularly in Andalusia. So there's parades on the Thursday, the Friday, and the Sunday. I'm not sure that there's anything today.
All right, good. Sid!
That was fascinating, wasn't it?
Yep.
Pot gold.
All right, Tuesday night at the Calderon. Chelsea are going to be on parade, eh? An emotional game,
Seamless, Jimbo, that's seamless.
It's nice,
well
isn't
done.
It? Yeah. Especially
Madrid is the capital of world football this week, or the capital of European football, anyway.
I suppose it is.
Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid, all thrown together. That's a lot of German and English football fans hanging around.
Boy, it certainly is. And for Mu, it'll be an especially, bittersweet, I suppose, return back to the city where he was manager until not so very long ago. And to take on a team who beat him in the last cup match that he was involved in there, the Copa del Rey final, of course.
Yeah, Copa del Rey final where very famously Mourinho didn't go up to get his medal, and Aitor Karanka, of course, now is the Middlesbrough manager and was Mourinho's assistant, went up to get the medal. I'm not sure if it really counts as being on his behalf, but certainly went up to get the medal, and the king turned to the federation president and said, "What, do I give it to this guy?" And that kind of sums it up. Mourinho didn't speak to the media after that game. It was a pretty bad end to what had been a really bad season. I think a bad season both on the pitch and off it, where things were unravelling really quite quickly. I wonder what kind of mood Mourinho will be in the press conferences later, because he swings from being angry but at least saying things to what he was doing in the last few months in Madrid, which is to basically kind of go quiet and kind of go into this sort of silent huff in which he didn't really want to say anything. And I suspect that's the more likely of the two options, unless, of course, he wants to try and send some sort of message out. And it would be interesting to see if he does on that. I think he's lost his battle on Courtois, which he's not very happy about at all. And I wonder whether he may well feel like that he's lost that battle because UEFA intervened.
Right, because they've got it in for Jose, as I think we all know by now. Courtois should play then, Ivanovic won't, and we don't know yet if Eden Hazard's going to be fit or not. But this Atletico Madrid side, 8 straight wins for them now, Sid, and 4-2 at the weekend? No, sorry, 2-0 over Elche.
A little bit nervy, though. It was a little bit nervy. David Villa missed a penalty, and it took a while for them to get the breakthrough, which then came with a header from a corner, as it quite often does. The second penalty is a little bit of a ropey one, which Costa takes and scores.
Two things, though, Sid. We've been waiting for Atletico to burn out a little bit, or wondering if they would under this kind of high-intensity regime that Diego Simeone's installed there. But there haven't really been any signs of them slowing down yet, have they?
No, because the brief sign of them slowing down, I think it was 2 defeats in 3 games, that came just before this run of 8 wins in a row. And at that point, I think a lot of us thought, maybe this is that moment. But actually, they've come through it. One of the things that they've done that's quite interesting is that they've been quite public I mean, not to the point of being very explicit, not to the point of shouting about it, but they've publicly admitted, yes, players are tired. Yes, it's true that this is a team that doesn't rotate. And I think what we've seen going hand in hand with that is a really, really conscious attempt from Simeone to bring the fans into this, to try and create from the noise of the stadium the energy that maybe the players kind of themselves don't have. And I think that's certainly, you watch the game against Villarreal before the Barcelona match, and Simeone spent the whole game basically sending instructions to the supporters, not to the players. There's a real sense now of communion. Every interview that Simeone does, he makes a big, big point about getting the fans on board. And their ability to withstand this is extraordinary, because, you know, the squad isn't, in theory at least, as big as other squads. So I actually don't think it's as bad as it sometimes looks. And the achievement's incredible. They're now four games away. Four games left in the league. Three victories would win them the league. But Atletico, oh, there goes Stella. Atletico keep coming through it.
Amazing. Sid, I don't know if you've seen much of Chelsea this year. They struggle with teams who basically pack men behind the ball, force them to go wide, all that kind of thing, and sit deep. Is that Atletico? It's not really, is it?
It sort of is. Can I tell you what I thought was great yesterday? We were at the Calderon yesterday and spoke to Thiago, and there's an interview with Thiago in today's paper, and also spoke to Diego Ribas and to Gabby. And there was a little scrum of us around Gabby, and someone said to him, "So, I mean, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Chelsea will basically give you the ball." And he said, "Well, we'll give it back to them." and this could be the classic counter-attack doesn't exist scenario in which two teams sit back and say, you attack us, after you, I insist.
Wow, okay, that's shaping up to be quite an intriguing, tactically speaking, semi-final. Of course, you've also got the Torres factor, and that would have been a big story once upon a time.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the Torres factor is going to be, there's a really nice interview today with Torres in El Mundo, one of Spanish papers, and I think the Torres thing is genuinely a big deal. And I think it's hard, perhaps, at times for people in England to appreciate just what Torres represented for Atletico Madrid. I mean, a genuinely huge, huge figure. There's an enormous amount of admiration and affection for him still. And I think there's a little bit of me that almost wants Torres to do the ultimate act of love for his first club and get the ball turned around, run up the other end and score an own goal.
Right. That would be quite a sight, wouldn't it? Sid, the other semi-final, meanwhile, Bavarians are quietly confident about this with their good track record against Real Madrid. I noticed that, was it Marca had the headline, Pepsodios, which is nightmares, but with Pep in it.
Yeah, the nightmare of supposedly being Bale and Ronaldo, and those are two players he's worried about.
I mean, he's worried about them, not that Pep's
I don't think it's much of a leap of faith, is it? So, he's worried about Bale and Ronaldo. I mean, to be honest with you, I suspect he's also worried about Modric and Alonso and to some extent about Benzema as well. And I know that certainly for the second and third years, I think, of Benzema's time at Real Madrid, at a time when people in Madrid were saying he wasn't good enough, he was actually one of the players in the Madrid side that people at Barcelona admired the most, because they could see that while he was sometimes perhaps a little cold, he was technically a very, very good player. There was a feeling that he would work really well in the Barcelona team. And so I think Guardiola probably has concerns beyond just that. Madrid, I saw a story in one of the, I can't remember which media it was, that Real Madrid's board of directors were upset at what they saw as Bayern's arrogance. At which point, of course, they went set about beating up the pot with their kettle.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, as you say, capital of football this week, Sid. Enjoy it, and we'll catch up with you again on Thursday, I hope.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thank you, Sid. I mean, as I say, the Germans certainly super confident. They feel that few are better than Guardiola at pinpointing a team's weakness, and after seeing Real lose 2-0 to Dortmund, there are plenty of weaknesses there to be pinpointed. It was also in European action this week. You got Sevilla and Valencia. Sevilla, who are the fouliest, the red cardiest team in Europe, we were discovering yesterday, James. It's an interesting game. And then Europa League semi-final. The other Europa League semi-final is
Benfica play Juventus.
That's right. Benfica, it's a special week for them because
they won the league yesterday.
Yes.
They beat a team coached by a former Juventus player.
Oh, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I'm delighted for Benfica. They had a horrible conclusion to last season.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
They lost the league, the cup, and what was it?
The Europa League final
in the space of about a week.
Mm.
All, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of it was down to last-minute goalery by their opponent.
Congratulations, Barry, on your fine memory. Well, anyway, they're back on top. That's their 33 league title. In other European news, Atletico's still 4 points clear. Barcelona, Real Madrid are 6 behind. They've got a game in hand. In Holland, major shock in the Dutch Cup final. Simon, I don't know if you crossed this. There was all sorts of disruptions by the Ajax fans who were throwing flares onto the field and that. They took the lead, but they ended up losing to Pek Zwolle, who picked up the first ever major trophy. Brilliant stuff.
Amazing.
That is amazing. In Italy...
Sorry, someone told me...
Mm-hmm.
Someone told me that in the Dutch Cup final, did a goalpost go on fire?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe, because certainly the game was held up for over an hour. And with the amount of flares that were being charged out, I didn't see that myself, but...
It was a very reliable source.
Okay, then go
best to investigate this morning.
That defeat must be hard to swallow for Ajax.
Oh! Nicely done, James. In Italy, Roma have confirmed that there'll be at least runners-up this year. Luca Toni's now got 18 goals this season, which is exactly half his age, is that right?
He's 36.
He's 36, yeah, good. Also, Livorno sacked their manager, Domenico Di Carlo, or Mimmo Di Carlo, to his chums, which don't include Livorno anymore, after their defeat away at Milan, which was Milan's fifth straight win. Livorno reappointed the fella who they sacked to bring in the guy who lost it a week before they brought in Mimmo Di Carlo, which means they're now on their third manager. And they, like the other two, what have they got in common with the bottom three? All the bottom three have done what, James?
Well, sacked their manager and brought him back.
In the course of the same season. Remarkable, isn't it? Oh, also, we should mention in France, Marseille-Lille played the worst game of the season anywhere ever.
But Berbatov scored.
Oh, Berbatov. Mm. He scored the ultimate Berbatov goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Paint a picture for us.
Well, the ball comes into him on the left-hand channel of the box. He just sort of chests it down. And by his body language, you'd think that the referee had blown his whistle and given an offside, because he just sort of just nonchalantly lobs the keeper. Bit of a controversy in France about whether he meant it. Apparently the journalist clearly went up to him and said, "You were crossing the ball." And one of his teammates said, "Yeah, he did look at me, but maybe he was trying to put the goalkeeper off." And Berbatov kind of looked at them and went, "Do you really think I didn't mean that? Are you crazy?" But yeah, it was one of the best Berber goals that I've seen in a long time.
A great Berber celebration as well, i.e., no celebration.
No celebration.
It was like really lazy from start to finish.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was just when he came to finish that he just became the laziest, kind of most nonchalant Berbatov you could imagine. Just sort of went, "Bah."
It looks like he's returning the ball to somebody. Like, yeah. Have that back then.
Or the last kick of the ball you'd have just out when your mum's called you in for your tea. Right. You know, just swish and then... Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Wow, while all that was going on, very little was happening in the Championship, Sunburnt, because they're playing today.
They are playing today.
Does that render it pointless, us speaking about it, given that nobody will hear this until Tuesday when they... go to work?
I mean, mildly, yeah. Mm. But there are issues that are likely to be decided in the next, 36 hours.
Tell us.
Well, Leicester's league title, they're up already. But if Burnley lose today, or if Leicester win tomorrow, then they go up as champions.
Ooh.
Burnley will be promoted if they win today or if Derby fail to win today.
Right.
And then there are a couple of playoff positions likely to be sealed. Mm. Also in the next day, Derby are definitely there. But QPR, if they don't lose to Watford at home today, then they'll be in the playoffs.
Right.
And
Wigan are also up in there?
Yeah, Wigan will also likely to seal their playoff space,
right, okay,
place today, I think. The sixth playoff place is entirely up for grabs with several teams.
Brighton, Bournemouth, Reading, Ipswich, Forest...
The problem is that no one really has momentum. Mm. Forest have gone through a terrible run, but won again at the weekend. Watford are away back, but if they win their game in hand, then they're 2 points away. There are several teams who are in the fight for that spot, and none of them really want it.
Simon, Leicester or Burnley, who's better equipped for the Premier League?
So, Leicester have a good squad and a good team and have been really powerful and impressive all the way through the season. And they are now, they're already planning for the Premier League. They're making kind of tactical adjustments, perhaps thinking about how they're going to line up in the Premier League. I think Leicester have been a very impressive team for first to last. And that's not saying Burnley are not, but Burnley have, I mean, this is a bit of a miracle season with a very small squad. They've been in the top two or three for the entire season. But you would have thought that they need significant reinforcements for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Will Nigel Pearson go in with a bullet as the hardest manager in the Premier League next season? Another title that David Moyes has lost. Is
yeah.
Another sad record gone.
Yeah, he certainly has a... He has a decent mean face, doesn't he?
I like Sean Dyche's voice.
Sean Dyche has one of the greatest voices in football.
Gary Monk has faced down bricks. You might want to back him.
Yeah.
No?
He looks too much like acting's Damian Lewis.
Alan Pardew has faced down professional football players.
That's also true. Yeah, Alan Pardew. Yeah, how about that?
Well, it's hard.
And old men.
And old men. Well, all very interesting, Simon. All very interesting.
Let's the bottom is also, I mean, obviously we're in the final three games, but the bottom three is kind of looking like, although they're not far away from the teams above them in terms of points, they're all, the current Championship's current bottom three all have quite difficult fixtures, except perhaps for Yeovil, who are a little bit away at the bottom. I feel that bottom three might remain the bottom three.
Oh.
Blackpool have just slipped into it, and their downward spiral continues to astonish. They were they had a wonderful start to the season. They were top of the league after six games, and have barely won since. I think they won five of their first six games, and have won five of their subsequent 37.
In the wake of the great anchovy protest of last week, there was an interesting one at Bloomfield Road over the weekend, where Blackpool's players were pelted with tangerines and tennis balls.
Oh,
in the 53rd minute, which is when they won the FA Cup, 1953, was it?
Mm. There you go.
Poignant.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
I like a tangerine.
Well, I much prefer a tangerine to, for example, a mandarin. Never been a fan of mandarins in the same way as a tangerine, although they're often easier to peel, I find. Anyway, coming up in the next part of Football Weekly, we touch on other records that are not going too well for David Moyes, and more with the situation of Norwich and Chums at the bottom.
I think that's the problem with the small orange and the small citrus fruit, is that there appears to be a bias towards easy peeling now.
Yeah, well, easy peeling, USP, isn't
it? But for me, it's the flavour of the fruit itself.
Well, a good tangerine will often reward you.
Any orange citrus fruit is easily peelable if you roll it first.
What fresh learning is this, Barry? You roll the fruit first?
Apply a small bit of pressure, roll it.
With the palm of your hand?
Yeah, and roll it on the table.
Barry's miming a rolling action, much as if you were, say, kneading dough. Not kneading dough, rolling dough into a ball.
No, roll it. Yeah, okay, kneading, rolling,
If it was pizza dough, it would be that sort of rolling gesture.
You would do that kind of thing. And you're saying that will loosen up the skin of a particularly tight...
Yeah, I suppose it detaches the...
absolutely.
Stuff I don't know pith. The name of pith from the inside of the
which
skin.
Which actually, again, I find an enjoyable part of a small orange, eating the pith.
Well, people have very different approaches
now
to pith.
Your take, etc. Sorry, you just said.
Well, some people will have no pith, and some people will are happy to take it.
Well done for our restraint, everybody. Oh no, Barry's just let us down.
Sorry.
That's remarkable. That's remarkable.
It's not remarkable.
It is remarkable. I didn't know that.
It's not as remarkable as Jonathan Wilson's banana facts.
I was just going to mention Jonathan Wilson and his banana facts.
I'm not entirely sure it's true, Barry's tip.
Well, I think we're all eager to get home and try that out with it.
They do say that before you juice a citrus, you should give it a roll.
Really?
Give it a roll and then chop it in two and then get your juicer out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've never done it before peeling for consumption.
All right. Have a go at that, listeners. Let us know what you think. But yeah, banana. Jonathan Wilson, of course, who would know about this but Jonathan Wilson? He basically was appalled that I was including bananas in my fruit bowl. And he pointed out something which apparently the rest of the world was well aware of, that bananas emit some horrible toxic gas which forces other fruit to ripen against its will and natural process of decay. Mm. So you have to keep them separate and ideally hang them up on a banana stand, an implement whose existence I was not aware of previously. So,
but if you want to ripen a pear, you stick it in a paper bag with a banana.
With a banana?
Yeah.
It works on both ways. It has a positive force as well as a negative energy.
Right. I remember when Jonathan told us this, and he said it with such gravitas that I sort of wanted to rush home and take the bananas out of the fruit bowl.
Or just rush home anyway. All right. Have some of that then, listeners.
We could perhaps have mentioned to snip into the championship segment.
Oh, right.
The Brentford have confirmed their position in the championship for next season.
Good for them.
At the weekend. And slightly working Watford into things one more time. Mark Warburton, who is the Brentford manager. A few years back at Watford, Brendan Rodgers was the manager, 2008 to 2009.
What's happened to him?
He was the manager. Malky Mackay was his first team coach. Sean Dyche was a coach. And Mark Warburton was academy director. And, they've all won promotion since. Brendan Rodgers is on the cusp of the Premier League title.
Mm.
They've done quite well as a little group. Good. Shame none of them did that well with Watford. I mean, they all did well with Watford, but Watford are still
not that well. Mm. Yeah. Crikey. Anyway, now, Everton Man United. Another of Sunday's treats. 2-0 victory for Everton. And United, by all accounts, lucky that it wasn't worse. You can pretty much pick your stat regarding this game. You could have the fact that Everton have now made a 38-point swing over Man United from last season, since David Moyes moved from one to the other. You could have the fact that that's the first penalty Everton has scored against United in the league for 42 years. That Man United have now had 10 defeats in the last 22 games. About the fact they've only got 6 points from the last 12 games. That their record against the 6 sides above them is 1 win in 12. That they've only scored 3 goals in 10 matches against the top 5 this season. And that they've lost all 4 games to Everton and Liverpool for the first time in a single top flight season. In fact, I believe I'm right in saying that there's never been a North West football team that's not taken any points against their fellow North West football teams. But there has now, because it's Man United. Yeah. And they're out of the top 4 for the first time in 19 years. I mean, they just keep coming.
And it's really surprising because, according to their manager, they played very well yesterday.
Maybe he was doing that Mourinho sarcasm bit.
Possibly.
Still, at least, you know, there's a basis for a good team next year. There's, Danny Welbeck, and they can...
Chris Smalling.
Emmanuel
Vidic.
Vidic as well. Probably Evra will still be around. Oh, dear. Was this another of those turning points and... watersheds and that for United?
I think that... I mean, it was totally hideous, obviously. Mm. There was a bit of a sense before the match that with Young and Cleverly left out the squad altogether, rumours circulating that Welbeck wanted out and he was on the bench, that Moyes was picking the players that he plans to build his team around.
Ooh.
And leaving out the ones who might not be there next season. Mm. And if that's the case, heaven help him. Mm. Because that team did not excel yesterday.
Whereas Everton?
Everton, it was a slightly unusual performance for them. They surrendered possession a lot, and that was kind of part of their tactic. But generally played excellently. And a lot of praise has been heaped again upon Seamus Coleman, who was, like an incredible dynamo of non-stop energy on that right flank.
To be fair, it was made very easy for him, which is not to detract from his performance in any way, but Butner at left back had no help at all from Kagawa, and repeatedly, getting horribly exposed by Coleman, and David Moyes didn't seem to know what to do about it, and it's not the first time he's been found wanting when things are going badly wrong. His decisions he makes on the touchline haven't been... Well, there haven't been any, really, or they've come too late, and it's weird.
Japan,
it's
very much buy one, get one free Shinji all over the place. He advertises pretty much every product going.
Really?
And there's a big billboard in Shinjuku Station, which has Shinji in his United shirt, advertising the nutritional supplement partner in Japan, which is a company called Mandai Fermentation.
Cool.
little right, fact for you there. Good.
Any other Japanese-based football facts you can throw
that
away?
That was the one I was saving.
What were you over in Japan for?
Holiday.
Ah.
You might be aware of the concept.
I certainly am. Oh, I see. Yeah, and so that was nice then, was it?
Oh, very nice.
What was the best thing you did there?
I just eating shabu-shabu food.
Right.
Where it was all you could eat for, like, 12 quid and all you could drink for 6.
You asked, Barry.
What's shabu-shabu food?
Shabu-chic.
It's kind of like a stock pot that you fill with loads of vegetables and stuff, and it builds up the flavour, and you get a big pile of meat, and you put it in, and you swish, swish, shabu, shabu. And by the time you've done that, it's cooked, and you just shove it in your mouth.
It's a casserole, basically.
It's no, it's like not. It's an open stock pot. It's like
it's like a meat fondue.
With no cheese and stock.
There's no cheese in a meat fondue.
Yeah. It's a shabu-shabu.
It's a shabu-shabu. But fondue has cheese, doesn't it? I mean, is that not the basis of a fondue?
Well, cheese fondue has cheese.
Cheese fondue is cheese.
You had a Japanese breakfast as well.
I had a Japanese breakfast, which is lots of marinated mushrooms, and that was very nice.
Bingo. Well, Everton stay in the hunt for the top four finish. They are 1 point behind Arsenal with 3 games to go. Arsenal, though, look like they have rediscovered some form again with the return to the side of Aaron Ramsey. A big win for them away at the KC Stadium, Barry.
It was, and I thought Hull started really well and were unlucky possibly to go behind. It was a kind of weird situation for me. I was watching these games in the company of an Arsenal fan and 2 Manchester United fans. The 2 Manchester United fans wanted Everton to beat their team because it would impinge on Arsenal and hasten the departure of David Moyes.
Ah, yeah.
And the Arsenal fan kind of wanted Arsenal to lose against Hull because he now thinks because they swatted them aside in this game, they'll lose the cup final.
Right.
And he would rather win the cup final and not finish in the top four than...
It's complicated business being a football fan.
It is. It's ridiculous when it gets to this end of the season. It was all highly amusing because I didn't really care who won any of the games. So, I wanted Liverpool to beat Norwich, obviously.
See, for a second I thought you were going to say that the Arsenal fans wanted them to lose against Hull because that would hasten the departure of Arsene Wenger, whether there was any...
No, he just thinks it's a bad omen that because they've beaten them easily, although this it wasn't as easy as the scoreline suggested, I would posit, that they will now lose the cup final.
You think so?
No, I don't think so. Ah. He thinks so. It's not rational, but then supporting a football team often
it's
isn't.
The height of irrationality, yeah, very much so. Well, Ramsey back in. Podolski, quick question, why is he not used more? Why has he not been in... more for Arsenal?
He offers his fullback absolutely no protection. He's a right. bit of a liability, I think, in that sense, has often been found the case. But I do think it's been underplayed how Arsenal have missed Ramsey, who, you know, many people were saying would be contender for player of the year before his injury. But, again, Ozil and Walcott, playing them all three together. I mean, Walcott obviously wasn't playing.
Yeah, but you get injuries, don't you? Everyone's had injuries. Look at Man City.
You get injuries.
You get a squad. You
when
buy
a transfer
players
window opens, you should buy players to adequately replace them, which Arsenal didn't do. But when all those three players are fit and available, they are a very good team.
That's certainly true. Well, they may well be in the Champions League. They certainly look in pole position for that. Let's just finish off by talking about events down at the bottom. Palace have confirmed their survival, of course, first time ever, etc. and so on, that they managed to stay up in the Premier League. Victory against West Ham. Very sad day, that, of course, with the tributes for Dylan Tombidis. Surprised not that they were the only club with a minute silence and stuff. I was surprised that there wasn't more made of that across the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, because he'd made senior appearances for them. It wasn't like some youth teamer that no one had ever heard
even
of.
If it was.
It's very sad, but... You know, I don't think the fact that there wasn't many silences for him elsewhere is in any way disrespectful.
No, fair enough. Okay. Paul Dawley was there tweeting, "Teams read out at Upton Park and a smattering of West Ham fans booing Thomas Ince's name. How many generations can this last?" Extraordinary. West Brom taking on Man City tonight, but while we wait for that game, it's all very, very tight. There's indeed the bottom five separated by just 4 points now from West Brom down to Sunderland, still in the bottom place. Sunderland 3 points off safety, 1 point behind Cardiff and Fulham. Cardiff got a point at home to Stoke. Fulham, of course, lost at Spurs. Ooh, Archie Rin took with a tweet here saying, "Odd to think that just 3 years ago, Liverpool and Fulham finished level on points in the Premier League." That's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, 2 seasons ago, Newcastle finished 13 points ahead of Liverpool. Now look at the sort of decline. But
yeah, All right, so what's going to happen? I mean, Norwich, we didn't discuss too much their chances. You're still 2 points clear. This defeat at the weekend to Liverpool hasn't changed that. You're still 2 points clear of the drop.
Yeah, I think it's very uncertain what's going to happen because I don't think there's any real indicators of consistency, on apart from consistent badness, on part of any of the teams. So you would look at Sunderland's running. You know, they've got Cardiff at home, West Brom at home, Swansea at home.
Man United away, let's throw that in there as well, why don't you?
And, you know, you could see that these look like a reasonable running, but at the same time, with only won three games at home all season.
Didn't Sunderland win at Old Trafford in the Cup? Or
they did, on penalties.
On penalties, yeah.
I think Fulham are probably my best
Norwich,
bet for
you've got Man United away as well.
Yeah, and then we've got Chelsea away, who right. may, it's the, I think, after the second leg of the semi-final, so they may have nothing to play for, may have thrown it by then. Then we've got Arsenal, final day of the season,
right,
who may not need anything for fourth place, or might do.
Oh, they might do.
It's all very up in the air, but I would say a Fulham with Hull at home, Stoke away, Crystal Palace at home, their home form's been improving of late. I think they're probably, I would say, most confident about them staying up.
Are you more optimistic? I know you lost at the weekend, Norwich lost at the weekend, so obviously it didn't help the points balance, but are Norwich fans more optimistic now because of their performance, their ability to... They proved an ability to score goals against...
And the new manager?
...better teams.
Yeah, they scored goals. Hooper got a goal, our striker scored a goal. That was good. And we didn't give up. That was one of the things that we've been doing increasingly under Houghton. The Villa away defeat where we were 1-0 up and then 4-1 down within 15 minutes. There was a feeling that we'd lost our spine. As Rodgers acknowledged post-match that Neil Adams changed the setup of the Norwich side and we did better. He had to bring on a third centre-back in the last 15 minutes to accommodate that. I think people might have slightly, you know, with the Alan Partridge comparison, slightly underrated Adams' ability as a coach. So, you know, there's hope. And I don't think there was hope 2 weeks ago after West Brom.
How cruel. How cruel are there to be hope?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see, eh? We'll see. It does look a very complex bottom three race for...
Well, Villa are still very much in the mix. You'd sort of presume Hull are safe and Swansea, but...
Relegation, eh? Well, it's going to be a dramatic final three or four games, depending on which club you're following, of the season. That brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. Enjoy those semi-finals and, of course, your Bank Holiday Monday action in the Championship and beyond. We'll be back on Thursday with reaction to what happened in Europe and more. In the meantime, it's many thanks to Paul, to James, Barry and Simon and producer Ben. Have a super week. Speak to you Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.